Hare Krishna. This is Anagar Swami.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Okay, great. I'll be right with you there. In case you've been having a problem that there's not a battery on my phone when the electricity runs out, so I have some person ready to put on a generator here in case there's a problem, so hopefully. Okay, reading from the Vriyat Bhagavatamrita, chapter 5, text 62. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Vidarmaika Parai Shukshka Jnanavadi Jnanavadi Kritarane Vishmadidi Praharaye Varma Marma Dido Dida Tetasyam Matkrite Swasya Srimutau Chakrapanina Vayamanena Chakmaya Shobha Srikritya Vadasa. Swayed by dry speculation, concerned only with their own dharma, Bhishma and others on the field of war fiercely attack Lord Sri Krishna, piercing his armor and flesh. Lord Krishna, the wielder of the Sudarshana Chakra, tolerated for my sake those repeated attacks on his divine body, although I tried to stop him. Commentary. In text 62 through 70, one second. In text 62 through 70, Arjuna explained how Krishna's good intentions often brought the Pandavas to grief. During the 18 days of battle of Kurukshetra, even though Krishna had promised to take up no weapons himself, warriors like Bhishma more than once attacked him. Because Krishna wanted Arjuna victorious at all costs, Krishna never turned away from these attacks, but repeatedly exposed to the danger of injury his tender body, more precious to Arjuna than his own. Bhishma and the others who tried to harm Krishna justified themselves on the grounds that they were following principles of righteous warfare. Pitradio vihantavya kshatriyena anangane. On the battlefield, a kshatriya should be ready to kill even his father or other relatives. But since Krishna is the aim of all true religious principles, the attacks on him were unrighteous. Arjuna says that the warriors who attacked Krishna did so because their understanding was dry and impersonal. They reasoned that since Krishna is the absolute truth, he cannot feel pain when pierced by weapons, so attacking him is not wrong. This means, Arjuna implies, that they were not pure devotees and had no real understanding of the sweet honey taste of Sri Krishna's lotus feet. The blows Krishna received in battle seemed to penetrate his skin and draw blood. The attacks were earnest and forceful enough to have been fatal for a human fighter. More likely, however, the so-called blood flowing from Krishna's transcendental body was actually perspiration, an ecstatic symptom of his compassion for his devotee. Krishna's purpose was to show the world how much concern he always feels for his devotee. Arjuna tried to dissuade Krishna from facing these challenges. He told Krishna, "My Lord, since you promised not to join the fight, why are you advancing to kill Bhishma? Why are you accepting the blows of Bhagadatta and others while I am here to protect you?" Speaking like this, Arjuna grabbed hold of Krishna's feet and tried to stop him from attacking Bhishma. Ultimately, Krishna's sweet will is supreme. He is Chakrapani, the wielder of the Sudarshana Chakra. This eternal weapon, he could have effortlessly warded off all attacks and killed all opponents whenever he wished. But he bore the blows of various enemies just to increase Arjuna's rank. Om Gyanam Timulam Vasya Gyanam Jana Shalakaya Taksuram Malutam Vina Tasmai Sri Gurave Maha Vancha Kaupa Tirubhyascha Vipashindu Bhaye Vacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Nama Vairagya Yug Bhakti Risham Priyatnai Apayamam Manadip Samantam Kupambuhiya Paradhuka Dugi Sanatanastam Pabamastriyami Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Vidadha Shivasade Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Greetings from Sri Vrindavan. Let's see, I just kind of wanted to share, some of you may have been here, but Vrindavan is being urbanized at an alarming rate. Every day, about 10 o'clock, it's the winter, I take a walk. And I'm actually quite astounded because I found, it's just amazing. I would say it's not more than a 7-minute walk from the temple towards the Jamuna. I found the Vrindavan I always wanted to find visually. Probably one of the most beautiful places I've ever seen in the world. I just walked towards the Parikram path, and where you go right, some of you know, where you go towards the Goshala and the Damohan, I turn left. And then I ventured into these, like, there's a little road and there's little gates, and I ventured in these little solid metal gates and found really the gardens of Vrindavan. Because Vrindavan, more than any place else, requires tons of flowers. Because there's 5,000 temples, and they all offer garlands. And a lot of temples, like the Krishna Balaram Mandir, there must be hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of garlands offered every day. Because the pilgrims, they buy the garlands, and they offer them to the deity. I really found the place where they grow all the flowers, but it's just more than that. There's just exotic trees and exotic paths, exotic birds and peacocks and simple bridgebossies. And it's just, if some of you ever come here, whoever comes here, I'll show you this. It's just amazing, astounding. Described in Goloka Vrindavan, there are marigolds. So there's these fields with five or six different colored marigolds, rose gardens. Anyway, I was thinking, I've been here for 36 years, and it's only been 10 minutes from my door. I never found it. And then all of a sudden, when the urbanization hits, looking for some Vrindavan, I found it. So it's a very beautiful walk. And it's called Udipan. Udipan means that if you're on the path of bhakti, everything's about developing your devotion. And devotion means the strong desire to want to please. The focus, the selfless focus on the desire of the object of love. And when you have that sentiment in the heart, one way it blossoms to the fullest extent are external objects that remind you of the object of your love. So, Krishna's beautiful gardens, beautiful flowers, the simple brijbasis. Sometimes I take different people on a walk with me, and I have a godbrother here, actually from New York, from Little Italy, and he walks around Vrindavan hours and hours a day. That's his kind of thing. And what he does is he takes stacks of 10 rupee notes and he hands them out to sadhus and poor people and widows. So we go to these gardens, and then you go past the gardens, and then there's this path which runs parallel to the Jamuna, which may still be a couple hundred yards away, more than that. But and there's these little wood gates, and you enter into these little forests, and you meet the brijbasis. And sometimes he gives 10 rupees, and, when you're in the urban part of Vrindavan, people grab for money. But here, it's only paper, because people have real wealth. And they're so satisfied. It was so beautiful today. Every day I pass this field, and there's 7 or 8, 10 ladies just cultivating the field, getting it ready, I guess, for the next planting. And I go, Radhe, and they smile, Radhe. And there's a sense that people are actually satisfied. There's nothing more they want. There's no other place they want to go. And they're happy doing what they're doing at the moment. And it's such a beautiful thing to see that. And I realize I have a long way to go. But it's inspirational, so it's a beautiful time in the winter. Even now, the weather is just is still sunny, beautiful during the day, crisp air, and the residents, the people that live here. So that's really nice. Let's talk about today's verses. We're discussing the love of the Pandavas, Narada, of course, in his search. Looking for the topmost devotee. and the topmost recipient of Krishna's mercy. And that's the person who's feeling the most love in his heart, and therefore the most happiness, actually. And that's our aspiration, to experience that. Everyone's aspiration is to experience that. But what does love really mean? Love really means that you give yourself fully to another. Meaning you give yourself fully to the desires of another. And that's, in one sense, that's our constitution. Because we're a particle of consciousness, of the supreme consciousness. And our relationship is service. The part exists for the whole. And existing for the whole is to give pleasure to the whole, which requires consciousness, which requires individuality, and which requires a full giving of oneself. And that's our job in spiritual life. That's what our struggle now. It's called surrender. It's the entrance to bhakti. That's where really real bhakti begins, is with surrender. Where you give yourself. You give up the egoistic, self-centered consciousness, and you give yourself over to God and God's devotee, and that's the position that opens the heart to full love. Without that, that's full love, and that's full pleasure. And that's what pure devotional service means. Anya bilashita shunyam jnana karma jnana vritam anukulyena krishna nu shilana bhakta uttama. That's what pure devotional service says. Anya bilashita shunyam. Zero other desires. Then what? Then anukulyena krishna nu shilana. Then anukulyena. Krishna anu, anishilanam, to follow Krishna's desire. There's no other desire in one's heart than that. And when one lives that way, that consciousness becomes mixed with one's spiritual practices, and that's called pure devotional service. It doesn't mean that it doesn't mean that one is yet completely pure, but one has given himself. Anyway, that's what we're seeing here, and it's a very, very beautiful thing. It's kind of a repeated theme in the Brihad Bhagavatamrita. We're seeing that consciousness. We're seeing that consciousness from the perspective of Narada, who is meeting these great devotees. We're seeing this consciousness from the perspective of the pure devotees who Narada meet, who point and describe a devotee whom they feel is superior to them. And we see this consciousness in the behavior of the devotees themselves. So Narada has gone to the Pandavas and described their selflessness and their love. And now the Pandavas are responding. And their response, of course, is not to see themselves in an exalted way. because it's contrary to the perspective of love, which is free from pride. And I mentioned this many times, one who is exalted spiritually, or any person that we really regard, they have one common characteristic. They don't see others as objects of their desire. They see themselves as the objects of others' desires. So it's a movement out of the center into the periphery of the mood of service. And when you move out of the center and start seeing yourself in that way and feeling yourself in that way, which is feeling the pleasure of the open heart flowing with the bliss potency of the Supreme Lord that's been put in that open heart, who's moved in that direction. Not only don't identify with any position of aggrandizement, you don't aspire for any position of aggrandizement. And therefore, unlike materialistic consciousness, you deflect praise rather than promote praise. So that's what we're seeing here in the Pandavas. And that desire to deflect praise and not move to that position of subject is so powerful that one will do, one who has that love avoids that position like the plague and does anything to avoid that situation. We have the ironic position that sometimes a devotee who wants to be the servant, as a service, has to take the position as a spiritual leader. But his qualification for taking the position of a spiritual leader is to see himself in relationship to his teacher. So his consciousness remains on the periphery because he doesn't see himself as guru. He sees himself as servant of his spiritual master. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, when the first Vyasa Puja was organized for him, wrote a very, very moving essay called Humbler Than a Blade of Grass of Srila Bhakti Siddhanta. And his consciousness, when he is sitting on that vyasasan, getting the praise and envisioning what people must be thinking. It was not yet institutionalized as it has been in modern times. I mean, and Bhaktisiddhanta and his disciples, they got together and, you know, instituted this as part of the spiritual process. But he's saying, what people must, they must look at me as just an animal. And then he expressed how you reconcile that because of the compassion and necessity to do that. So they're deflecting the praise here. And let's see here. And one of the ways Arjuna right here is going to deflect the praise is that, you know, they're saying, well, you're the object of Krishna's mercy. And Arjuna is saying, well, how am I so fortunate? I'm suffering like anything as Krishna's servant. When I see his divine body pierced, And this is the nature of intense love. And Sanatana Goswami in the purport makes the point that those that were the devotees that were attacking, like Bhishma, etc., who's one of the Mahajans, was making the point that it was righteous to attack. And of course, it says what righteousness, Krishna, it is the aim of religious principle. But it was not only righteous to attack, but Arjuna is thinking that they're thinking it's also okay to attack because he's the absolute truth. He cannot feel pain when pierced by weapons, so attacking him is not wrong. And the point here is that this means, Arjuna implies, that they were not pure devotees and had no real understanding of the sweet honey taste of Krishna's lotus feet. And what's the sweet honey taste of Krishna's lotus feet is that to reciprocate with his devotees' love, God actually develops a need for service to enhance the sweetness of the relationship. I know Jiva Goswami talks about this in terms of deity worship. That if you have a deity, I explained this before, it's an interesting point, that if you love the deity and it's cold in the room, he will require a blanket. Otherwise, he'll freeze. If you have a deity and you have love for that deity, and you don't feed the deity, that deity is hungry. That's loving relationship. There's need for service. And when you worship Krishna, or you worship the Supreme Absolute Truth in its full majesty and opulence, there's no service. It's called Shantaras. It's just appreciation. How great God is. But there's no need for service because God doesn't require that service because there's full awareness of his opulence. So in Kevala Bhakti, and therefore, because there is full awareness of his opulence and power, it can't be pure devotion because it creates an obligation and duty to worship and a fear if it's not done. Because of the greatness of God, then there's obligation. I must respect him. So there's this tinge of something that's external to love, an obligation or duty in relationship to a superior. And therefore, in real Kevala Bhakti, which means only Bhakti, Sri Guru Charana Padma Kevala Bhakti, son. In that God appears in the same category as us. And therefore, the love has no obligation or duty. So therefore, it's cable. It's only attachment. Anyway, the reciprocation here. This verse is also beautiful because it shows Krishna is attacked in this war, and it pierces his flesh. And that's an ecstasy. Because why? Because Krishna's reciprocating with his devotees. He's protecting his devotees. And he's showing his concern. So he's reciprocating. And therefore, the blood that's flowing, the perspiration, the blood flowing is actually an ecstatic symptom of compassion for his devotees. He wants to reciprocate that love. And that's his joy, and that's his pleasure, to express his love. his devotee. So, anyway, the main point here is Arjuna grabs hold of Krishna's feet and tries to stop him from attacking. And therefore, Arjuna is saying, look at all my trouble. How can you say that I'm in his devotional mood of humility? How can you say that I'm an object of mercy? Arjuna just bears the blows of various enemies just to increase Arjuna's fame. Text 64. Tane chintiyato japi vidayana pasarpati dukashayam mato brahman shukame jayatam katam. Even today, O Brahman, I remember those incidents, I cannot remove the arrow of grief from my heart. How then can I feel any happiness? So even the remembrance of Krishna's service towards Arjuna and the suffering that Krishna underwent for the sake of Arjuna, it pains him because love means wanting to please. And if someone serves you and undergoes so much difficulty, then you become the cause of their difficulty. So Arjuna is feeling, it's so painful for me that I love Krishna so much, and for me he became the chariot driver. For me he bore those arrows in his heart, and his body was blood was coming from his body, and his, whatever it is, the ashen color, the hair, ashen. For me, he did this. So again, he's deflecting praise, and I just sent out a journal. Some of you may have gotten it. But Satchinandana Swami in his class reveals how important it is to listen to the devotional sentiments of great souls. He says, what is the sound of your heart? Is it speculation, material desires, or the words of the sadhu? Our heart will be tuned to what we aspire for. If we thus listen to the words of the sadhu, our hearts will become affected by his longing. Carefully and with feeling, we should thus resonate with the prayers of great sadhus and allow their words to uplift and tune our hearts. He also wrote, our mind gets colored by our thoughts. These are some of the notes I took from his journal. Our minds get colored by our thoughts. Our thoughts should thus be of the quality of ultimate benefit, Shreyas. Instead, we think constantly of 1,000 small things that are only immediate needs, prayers. The method of developing a mind of ultimate thoughts is to hear and meditate on the Lord's associates, for their thoughts are focused on the highest consideration. So that's really what these books are for. Karmana yena dukam syam nicha priya janasihi atasya charanam pritte karunyasyapi lakshanam. Acts that bring pain to a dear one are not the sign of compassion or love. So now he's just saying, well, how can you even say that he loves me? Look at all the pain he's caused. And this is not necessarily logical. This is bhav. And what's the bhav? It's the bhav of love that I have no devotion. I have. And this is the qualification. Actually, I'm going to read something here. I told you there's a wonderful, wonderful devotee in Vrindavan named Srimati. And I don't want to cause her grief by praising her too much, but she's the real thing. And occasionally I have her association. And she always gives me packages of different things to inspire me in devotional service. So she gave me this letter from Srila Bhakti Siddhanta. I don't know who it's to, but it says, I understand your anxiousness in writing such a letter as you are single-handedly maintaining the Varanasi Math. Optimism, enthusiasm, Krishna Seva, service to the devotees, and Sri Nam Kirtan are beneficial for advancement. If all our endeavors are focused on fulfilling Krishna's desires, then Maya's allurement will never be able to captivate us. It's so simple, but the application is difficult. That is the mood of Bhakti Siddhanta. That is the foundation of bhakti. Our endeavors are focused on fulfilling Krishna's desire. Bori Jampabhu, I also sent out his thing about the retreat. He said, you want to test your Krishna consciousness? Just stop a few times during the day and see what you're actually wanting. What you're wanting is your level of consciousness. And the pure devotee, he's just focused on fulfilling God's desires, Krishna's desires. And when one surrendered like that, Daibyesha Gunamayi, Mamamaya Daratya, Mamam Abya Papad, it's so, Prabhupada gave it so simply. And that was his focus, again and again from different perspectives. Because that's the entrance, that's the foundation, and that's also the perfection. Always engaged in hearing, chanting, reading the books of Mahajans and the Gaudiya magazines, so that there will be no laziness in the matter of accepting the philosophy. Discuss Hari Katha with the devotees who are with you, and as you advance in your bhajans, you will start realizing your fallen condition. You must be aware of this phrase, the most advanced devotees consider himself the most fallen. Always endeavor for the well-being of your subordinates, and by doing so, we make advancement in our bhajan. Krishna Seva, Nam Seva, and Srinam Kirtan may appear to be separate activities, but all three have the same purport. By Nam Kirtan, Krishna Seva and Vaishnav Seva is possible. By Vaishnav Seva, Krishna Kirtan and Krishna Seva is possible. By Krishna Seva, Nam Kirtan and Vaishnav Seva is possible. Anyway, that's just part of the letter, but that's the Vaishnava. Most advanced devotee considers himself fallen, because having the most want for Krishna consciousness, it creates the conception that one is lacking it the most. So he can continue. Bhishma Drona Dihananam Nivritamam Pavartayam Mahagyani Varo Krishna Yakinchad Upadishtavan Yatashrutartha Shravanach Chukska Gyani Sukapadam Mahaduka Kridasnakam Bhakti Mahatya Chivanam. When I refuse to kill Bhishma Drona and others, Krishna, the best of wise scholars, taught me something to induce me to go ahead and kill them. So now he's going to criticize the Bhagavad Gita. This
is real madness. Because what's the Bhagavad Gita? The Bhagavad Gita is basically, it's Krishna trying to convince Arjuna to kill his relatives. I hope there's no one on this Sangha that's freaking out. Most of the people are familiar with the philosophy, but I tell that funny stuff. I don't know if it's funny. You judge for yourself. But in 1974, after being 4 years as a devotee, but not actually moving into a temple, I went to the San Francisco Ratha-yatra, and everyone was there, Vishnu, John, Tamal Krishna, Guru Kripa, Keshava Bharti, Harike, and so many. Everyone was there. Everybody was there. And, you know, so I went. I wasn't yet like a devotee, like joined, so people didn't consider me a devotee. And I came to the class, and I remember Ridayananda Maharaj saying, the Christians say, honor thy mother and father, thou shalt not kill. But the first instruction Krishna gives in the Bhagavad Gita is kill your parents. So this is confirming it. Arjuna is saying, when I refuse to kill Bhishma, grandfather, Drona, teacher, and others, Krishna, the best of wise scholars, taught me something to induce me to go ahead and kill them. Hearing only the literal meaning of what Krishna taught may please dry scholars, but to us, whose life and soul lies in glorifying pure devotional service, those instructions by the Lord give me great pain. Let me read this purport, and then I'll stop for questions. Commentary, the Upanishads convey the essence of Vedic knowledge, and Srimad Bhagavad Gita conveys the essence of the Upanishads. Various exalted sages become the receivers or rishis of each of the Upanishads, but Bhagavan Sri Krishna chose to speak his own Gita directly to his friend and devotee Arjuna. So whatever Arjuna is saying, the purport is saying, just see, the great rishis are chosen to become the receivers, and Arjuna is chosen to be the receiver of this sacred knowledge. Why? Because he is Krishna's friend and devotee, because the knowledge is about Krishna. And the revelation, a person, it's basically Bhagavad Gita is Krishna giving himself. And you only give yourself to someone who loves you. It's just natural. Because if you give yourself to someone who doesn't love you, you are left vulnerable to exploitation. So it's a psychological phenomenon. So the Gita is so confidential. Atosame sakacheti rahasyam gita uttama. Oh, Arjuna, I'm giving you this secret because you're my devotee and my friend. Because Arjuna is too humble to think himself great and is disappointed by Krishna having left the Pandavas, he does not consider himself a favored devotee of Krishna. So another reason he's saying, I'm so favored, this is talked about before, and they'll make further, then Krishna's left us. It's so powerful. It's so powerful. The emotion of love to want to be with the beloved. And sometimes it apparently comes into conflict with what pleases the beloved, who may want you to go someplace to do service or doesn't want to be. It's just the nature. Of course, the devotee wanting to please Krishna is only, to be with him is only to please him. But when Krishna's gone, it's very painful for the devotee. This is only, therefore, he tries to deny the transcendental value of the Gita, because the Gita is saying, telling him to fight with his grandfather and his guru. This is only a ploy, however, to distract Narada. Arjuna's argument here is not valid. The Bhagavad Gita, Krishna teaches pure devotional service, and he chose to speak it to Arjuna because Arjuna is one of his purest devotees. This is the Gita Mahatmya by Shankaracharya. Sarvo Panishado Gavo Doka Gopala Nandana Parto Vatsa Sudhir Bhokta Dukam Gitam Ritam Mahat. This Gita Upanishad, this Bhagavad Gita, the essence of all the Upanishads, is just like a cow. And Lord Krishna, who is famous as a cowherd boy, is milking this cow. Arjuna is just like the calf. And learned scholars and pure devotees are to drink the nectarian milk of Bhagavad Gita, Gita Mahatma 6. So are there any questions?
Hare Krishna Maharaj, this is Gail.
Oh, Gail. Hare Krishna. Thank you, Gail.
Yeah, somehow I'm really confused about this last point you're making. Where Arjuna, you know, out of his humility.
Say that again?
I say, I'm quite confused about this last point where you're saying that out of Arjuna's humility, he ends up kind of criticizing the, you know, Krishna for having him kill his family. I'm not getting this part.
Okay, I'll try to explain it to you. It's not so logical when you're in an emotional state. So the emotional state is caused by the thing is that I am not a devotee. Narada had just praised him. I am not a devotee. So he just praised him. So in this emotional state of bhava, in this emotional state of bhava, he just doesn't want praise. It's like a very strong emotion. I don't want praise. One closes his ears. He runs away when there's praise. Madhavendra Puri, when the Shira Chora Gopinath deity stole sweet rice for him, which is a wonderful story, then that deity, Shira Chora Gopinath, then the priest, discovered the sweet rice and went, Madhavendra Puri, Madhavendra Puri. You know, the deity has stolen sweet rice. And he was ecstatic initially because when your love is recognized by one whom you love, it's an extremely ecstatic feeling.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so he was overwhelmed with love, but then then it's really, you know, it's a real, real super ecstatic love. And then what happens is in that ecstatic love, he's just affecting praise. So, when he's been glorified, as fortunate, he's saying, how am I fortunate? In other words, fortunate, you're the receiver of the Bhagavad Gita, right? To directly, I'm fortunate as receiver of the Bhagavad Gita. Well, look what happened with those instructions. I was induced to, you know, kill all these people. So my situation was really painful and difficult. So it's not exactly logical.
he's just eager to deflect praise, and he's deflecting that praise that he's so fortunate to be the recipient of the Bhagavad Gita. Oh yeah, great, I'm fortunate. Okay, I understood the knowledge. And what happened? I killed everyone.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Gail. Anybody else have a question?
I wonder if nobody does, if I could just ask one more.
Sure.
Maharaj, I have a question.
Okay.
This is Bhakti and Stella. Please accept my humble obeisances.
Haribol, Stella.
Haribol. What is the proper etiquette then if you're in a situation in which people are praising you and you feel like running away? I mean, is it proper etiquette to run away?
Well, the proper mood is I'm a servant of my spiritual master. I'm a servant of Prabhupada. So we look at things in terms of service. Not run away, but praise is often just deflected, like Arjuna is doing.
Mm-hmm.
And then sometimes the praise is actually a glorification of the spiritual master, because one is a representative of the spiritual master. So if it's a glorification of Prabhupada, that one of his devotees is being praised, then one may just have to tolerate that as a service. But
mm-hmm.
at the same time, keeping his mind in consciousness, that's really what's being praised, is either one's teacher, because the good qualities I have are only because I'm representing the teacher, or... Either feel that, or you feel, or one feels, well, yeah, I have these qualities, but they're not mine. They're of the modes of material nature. Yes, I'm a scholar. Yes, I'm an artist, but it's given by God, and the praise goes to God. So internally, one can deflect the praise, and externally, one can deflect the praise. But
okay.
Ultimately, what one should do is just be conscious. I'm a servant, and what is the best for service? You know, we don't want to hurt other people. Just like sometimes I remember I took these people from New York. They just flew in, and they came to Vrindavan. I mean, really, they got off the plane. They had to go someplace else. The next day, they came to Vrindavan. I met them about 1 o'clock. I spent all day with them, took them so many places, and they gave me a donation. And, you know, and it was actually quite a, it gave me 10,000 rupees. The person was a businessman or something. And initially I kind of said, well, I don't do this for money, you know, or something. I forgot what I did. When I spoke to Satchinandana Swami, he said, no, you have to he's such an experienced preacher. He said, you have to reciprocate with people, you know? So reciprocating means saying, oh, thank you very much. This is your kindness. This is your grace, you know? You have to somehow reciprocate with people in different situations. But obviously, if one can deflect the praise, or, you know, that's also good. I mean, at least we shouldn't open our ears, you know. Like, let's say someone's next door talking about, you know, someone says, you know, did you hear that someone liked your, you know, your class? Oh, really? What did they say? You know? Oh, someone liked really how you, oh, what did they say? Can you tell me? Can you repeat? So at least we shouldn't be in that mood. I think there's the principle, and we can practically apply it. I mean, I think a practical application of it is we shouldn't be eager for it. I don't think we shouldn't certainly create it or inspire it or have it continue. I don't know if, you know, some nice praise comes from someone.
I get, you know, when you're with cultured people, anytime you praise them, they just say it's your mercy, or it's my guru's mercy. It's the culture of India, really. And I'm always amazed how it's so ingrained in people. Just like this one man in Delhi who I always stay with. This person in Delhi who I always stay with. He came to see me. So I'm Giriraj Swami's house, this nice porch, covered porch with two chairs. I could not get him to sit on the chair. He's my age. You know, he would not sit on the chair. You know, and so people have that kind of culture. Does that help, Stella?
Thank you, Maharaj, very much. I appreciate it.
We'll see you in February in Vrindavan. Looking forward to it.
Very much, Maharaj. Bye.
Thank you. Anybody else like to say hello or ask a question? Okay, anybody like to say hello? Always nice to hear from the people out there.
Hare Krishna, Maharaj. Accept my obeisances. This is Shastra Das.
Shastra, okay. Hare Paul.
Hi.
See you soon. And I worked out everything with Bhagavad.
Wonderful. Thank you.
Okay. Hare Paul.
Hare Paul.
Anybody else like to say hello?
Hare Paul, Maharaj.
Are you back in Florida?
I'm back in Florida, Maharaj.
Okay, great.
Yes. Being grateful for the whole experience and still feel like I'm looking out from a TV screen or a movie screen at something that happened. I feel it's all been a good experience.
Amazing, huh?
Yes.
That's not easy. But somehow you got Guru's mercy, Krishna's mercy, and you had to go through it and actually see some incredible mercy of God. That's wonderful.
Yes. I did say I never forget, so I can keep this attitude of gratitude, Maharaj. Please remember me in your prayers.
What's that?
I said, don't ever forget this, so I can keep this attitude of gratitude and be thankful. And I'm just asking you to remember me in your prayers, please.
Mother Indrani, I can never forget you.
Oh.
Thank you.
Thank you, Maharaj. Thank you.
Thank you. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Great. Anybody else like to say hello?
Hare Krishna, Maharaj. It's Bhagavati. Thank you for the class.
Well, thank you. It's nice to hear that you're on the class. And that's great. Thank you, Bhagavati. Hare Krishna.
Hare Bo.
Anybody else?
Hare Krishna, Maharaj. It's Lalita Madhava. Thanks for class.
Lalita. Hare Bo.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Sham.
Hare. It's nice. It was nice to hear about your walk there in Vrindavan. I've been to that part. I took that left hand turn once. It's very nice.
Did you ever take when you turn take the left hand turn? Did you ever go right then?
No, it was a long time ago, and I just went left, and I kept walking and walking, and then it got very wooded, and I got a little nervous, and then it came back.
You know what happens is you just go about 5 minutes. And then you make a right towards the Jamuna. You have to open these metal gates. And then it's kind of almost like a
I don't know, an Alice in Wonderland experience, you know, like that. You know, like I fell through a rabbit hole.
Yeah, yeah.
And I wound up someplace, but it was really spectacular.
Yeah.
I mean, spectacular. Because Vrindavan, you know, mostly in India, people cut down the trees and, you know, it's mostly fields and farming. But this is, like, beautiful, exotic trees and interspersed, you know, with hills and gardens and these paths that go through these things that are lined with trees on the side. And people are, when you see I say, woe is me. When you see people that have grown up in a pure environment and how simple and pure their heart is, it's really, really humbling. Simple and pure. It hasn't been fed with so much distraction and desires. I mean, we're programmed. I mean, Facebook and Twitter. Thankfully, God, I'm not on them at all. But I do got the computer, the cell phone, my God, how complex our life is. How many unlimited desires are created to stimulation in every moment externally, and forgetting the nature of the self and the happiness that's within. You don't have faith in that.
Yeah.
It really creates a faith that happiness is external to the self. And we become dependent on those things. So, I mean, there's use for everything. I'm not denying that there's use for everything, but where there's use, there's abuse.
Yeah.
And
I like how you said it, that the people were so satisfied. It's so wonderful to hear that, you know, being stuck in a city and feeling so dissatisfied all the time.
Well, I mean, you can be satisfied in the city or anyplace else. The environment definitely helps.
Yeah.
And then I go to my friend's farm, Prem Kishore, who for 3 years just developed and lived on this farm, just satisfied, take care of the cows.
Yeah.
But I love to go churn butter there. I do that now. he turns the milk to yogurt. He says milk never spoils, actually, if it's the real thing.
Uh-huh.
He turns to yogurt, and then we go outside, and he has like a real, like a pulley, you know, on one of these things that do the yogurt into butter, and then we take the butter out and drink the buttermilk. And
that's wonderful.
Anyway, for a guy like me, I grew up in Brooklyn. What's the famous book about Brooklyn? Like a tree grows in Brooklyn. It's like a steel, you know. So it's like, you know, I'm trying to get some training so I can enter into Vrindavan. You know, you want to be a gopi or a gopa, you know, you got to learn how to make butter out of yogurt. You got to learn these things.
Yeah. Well,
okay,
thank you for mentioning it.
Okay.
Hare Krishna.
Okay, Hare Krishna. Anybody else like to say hello?
Hare Krishna, Maharaj. I wanted to say Haribol as well. Please accept my humble obeisances.
Hey, Paul, great. I'm looking forward to see you. That's going to be great.
Thank you very much. Please keep us in
touch. When do you come again? In February, what is it?
We arrive in Vrindavan late at night on February 17th.
Okay, well, that'll be great. I'll have 18th, 19th, 20th, 21st, or so. We should be together for at least 5 days. That's nice.
Well, that's great. Wonderful.
Yeah, then I leave the 23rd back to America. Okay, Hare Krishna, thank you.
Hare Krishna, Maharaj.
Hare Krishna. Okay. Anybody else like to say say hello?
Hare Krishna, Maharaj. This is Govardhan.
Hare Krishna, Govardhan.
I'll be back there soon. My first stop is New Jersey. Okay, great. Thank you. Anybody else like to say hello?
Hare Krishna Maharaj.
Is that Henry?
Yes, Maharaj.
Oh, great to hear, and thank you. Hare Krishna.
Thank you for the class, Maharaj.
Okay. Anybody else like to say Hare Krishna? Say hello? Okay, I'm going to end now because I'm quite past my bedtime. We have a... In Vrindavan, I go to bed here generally at 7 o'clock. I can wake up really, really early in the morning. It's just nothing else happening for me. Okay, so thank you all, and I'll see you next week from greetings from Mayapur. I'll be there for a little over 2 weeks, and then... it'll be greetings from Puri, and then back to Vrindavan for a month. Okay, Hare Krishna.